The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
There is a sadness that comes up in the feeling like, wow, I am letting go of a way I saw myself, an idea of me in Amsterdam. And that is the area of ambiguous loss where there's just this like well of sadness, which can't easily be placed.
It's a wonderful chaos. It will be random, messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest and fight to find peace. Both head and the heart,
like it left you and me.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos.
Ambiguous. We're going to discuss
a very uplifting subject.
Yeah, actually, it is a very uplifting subject. Depends on how you look at it. Ambiguous loss. The idea there's things it's hard for us to mourn because societally they're not considered things we're supposed to mourn.
Why'd you pick this subject?
You know, there's subjects when someone uses a word and I feel my imagination explode. Because the term or the word, I've never used it, but I understand it in a very deep, deep place in myself. And someone said, oh, and it was in a passing conversation, and they said, oh, ambiguous loss, that's the worst. And I heard them say it, and I thought, what is that, ambiguous loss? And then it like hit me, like ambiguous loss, this sense of losing something, but it not being big enough to be able to mourn it. So it's ambiguous. Mm. It's in the middle. It's not really like if my mom dies, it's like everyone's going to console me and say, you know what, I'm so sorry for your loss and all the things that people say.
Yeah.
But if it's like, I'll give you an example. And for me, like for our relationship is that on Friday night, the woman who you spent time with left.
Yeah.
And for me, I felt there was a loss in her going.
Definitely.
And when I interacted with you, there wasn't immediately experience showing the sadness in that.
Yeah. You mirrored me and you were really right. I distanced myself from the emotion.
Yeah. And that's a moment where I would call that ambiguous loss, where it's like your girlfriend just left. And in some weird way, it's like, am I supposed to cry now? Because she's not really dead, right? She's not, knock on the hardwood. she's just not here. But like the weird thing is in a way you want to cry. Not you, I say we as people.
But I did.
Yeah.
I did.
But and imagine if we were like to allow all that ambiguous loss to really be experienced. I think people would think we're insane or they would, what is the words that people use?
Overreacting.
Overreacting. Yeah. Or I don't know, a lot of judgment.
Yeah.
And I've seen, and I've seen that I go through a lot of ambiguous loss, and I might certainly find sometimes it hard to cry about things that feel like, why would I be crying about this, you know?
Hmm.
And yet not crying around about it
feels like you're suppressing.
Yeah, suppressing and suffocating myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on Saturday, I went to visit a friend, okay, and she'll show me her house.
Uh-huh.
And I saw I wasn't really present. Like,
yeah.
I was talking about things, but I wasn't really there. And I had to message her afterwards because once I got home,
yeah,
then the tears came and then I realized, oh shit. And I messaged her. She says, yeah, I felt it. And thank you for sharing that. You also, own it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the way I experienced your Friday night. And it wasn't a problem. We pointed it out and it was fine.
We had a date night.
Yeah. Ronnie was busy.
So I kind of took Ronnie's place.
Yeah. I've been feeling a lot of this ambiguous loss the last weeks, because as I feel, we're not ending the show, but we're putting it on a hiatus where we don't know when we're coming back.
Yeah.
And the thing that I've found is that I'm going to go to Spain. And I really told myself, I don't know who I am in Spain. I don't want to bring old patterns there to comfort myself. I just want to experience it like a clean slate. Mm. And in a way, although I'm not completely leaving Amsterdam, there is a sadness that comes up in the feeling like, wow, I am letting go of a way I saw myself, an idea of me in Amsterdam. And that is the area of ambiguous loss, where there's just this like well of sadness, which can't easily be placed.
Yeah. I have to say, I tuned into the same experience today because I'm also leaving.
Yeah.
And especially seeing, I had a client that visited me this morning, and it was just like, hey, let's meet. I know you're leaving, so let's meet and have some coffee together.
Yeah.
And when I went home, I just felt this immense sadness because I'm going to Cyprus. Actually, I have no idea how my life is going to be there.
Yeah.
And first of all, that scares me because mm-hmm. it's unknown. And secondly, Amsterdam really feels like home.
Yeah.
And somehow taking this step is also, I didn't feel so much energy today to work. So I actually lied on my wooden floor and I did one thing. Do you know what that was?
Breathe.
Yeah. I fucking breathed, Andy Shaler.
Breathe, bitch. Oh my.
And kind of the breath for me always creates spaciousness to just sinking deeper to the experience, as opposed to getting lost in the turmoil of thoughts and projections that I might be having in the moment.
Yeah. How are you feeling like now that you're going to go to Cyprus? You don't know really, you're reacquainting yourself, of course, with who you are going to be now in a whole nother setting without all the baggage from before.
Yeah.
So in a way, what is the loss that you associate now, where you say there's the, going back to the topic of the show, the ambiguous loss?
I have a life here. There's a routine. There's the every day I come here and we are having an hour together. Every day I do my outdoor trainings. In Holland, there's a kind of freedom.
Yeah.
Even though there's COVID, there's a kind of freedom to move around, whether you're vaccinated or not.
Yeah.
And in Cyprus, there's more limitations. I also don't know where I'll be staying. Mm. I probably will be staying with different people, so I'm not really going to have my own place unless I rent a place. Here, work flies into my inbox every other day. In Cyprus, I'm going to have to see how that evolves. So that there's a lot of, I would say, comfort here.
Yeah, yeah.
And also this is the first time, the last 2 months, I'm not worried about finances. I feel really blessed. Mm. And all of a sudden I'm picking up and going to Cyprus.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's something in this, and it feels good to kind of break the comfort.
Yeah. I was talking to Ronnie about us taking the show on a hiatus, and she said she thought it would be harder for you than for me. because although you say that you don't like pattern in your life, having the show every day was part of the pattern that you relied on. She said that.
For me, in the last 2 years since we started, you have been my human connection.
Oh, wow.
And as you know, I don't really surround myself with a lot of people.
Yeah.
So you have been my go-to, but I think in Cyprus, I'm good.
Yeah, that'll be enough there. Do you remember the first time that you felt ambiguous loss?
The first time?
Yeah. Because I have a very strong feeling in my head the first time I experienced it.
No.
In my graduation of high school, I felt the first time ambiguous loss. Not in junior high school. I think many of the people I went to junior high school with, they went to high school and there was a bit of an excitement around it. In high school, after that ended, there was a deep feeling of loss that I couldn't place. No one had died. It was the end of a period in my life. And there was something about that loss that I can even go back to now and feel how painful it felt to leave that time in my life.
Hmm.
So I have a strong association with graduations, with leaving to countries, because, you know, I've lived in six places now. Each time I left, there was like a mourning of that. I don't know, you know, if I'll ever see these people again. And if I do, it'll be different than it was now.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I can almost go back to each of those moments and feel the loss. I've talked about, of course, Japan when I left, how hard it was for me. It was hard to leave Austria, to leave Vienna when I lived there. But in a way, I see the more you're going to something, so not going away from something, but going to something, the easier it is because you can look forward to something new.
Yeah.
But I do feel like these moments where we end a phase of our lives, there's this loss there that's really hard to articulate for others. And if people cry and grieve, other people might not understand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now that I'm sitting with it, there's, I can see that there's been ambiguous loss in key moments in my life. Yeah.
What are those?
I think the first time was 8 years old. And as you know, I was born in England.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were refugees. And then my father took us to Cyprus. And I had to go to school in Cyprus, learn the language, and kind of get used to another environment, which was quite raw. The only time I knew Cyprus when I was small was vacations and family. And that was pretty tough because all of a sudden the school system in Cyprus was a little bit more advanced than the UK for my age. And I had to learn Greek and a thing called grammar, which up until in England, you learn that later. So there was a lot of things I had to catch up with which I struggled.
Yeah. Culturally, I guess you would have also had to adapt, or was it very much, did you already understand the culture of England to Cyprus then?
No. I had to also do that.
No.
It's funny because in my life at the moment, there's quite a few people who have lost a parent or a brother or a sister. And I've held some space for certain individuals. And I noticed that even when Anna left on Friday and I had a few phone calls with individuals, I didn't create space for myself in there because I was holding space for others.
Yeah.
So in a way, I could feel the how ambiguous loss can also be diminished in terms of importance.
Yeah. I've seen that as coping mechanisms. I've used those a lot of my life.
What do you mean?
If I feel... especially when I felt pain I couldn't touch, I'd often talk to others, and through their sharing their pain, I could then feel my own pain.
Mm.
So I had a really hard time accessing my pain. So, for example, I told the story when I was told my dad died. I couldn't feel the pain. And then Ronnie cried when I told her. And when she cried, I could then cry because through her pain, I began to connect to my own. It's almost like I didn't even know how to access it, but I saw her accessing and gave me sort of a pointer in myself of where to go.
Hmm. I don't resonate with, but I can see why you would say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the weirder ambiguous losses that I think is something that comes up as you get older is the letting go of sort of self-images. So I noticed, for instance, I was lucky because I left the corporate director type life of position when I was about 35. And what I saw was that at 35, I very much identified as that person. And what I saw was when I left the business and called the same people that I knew then, they weren't that interested in connecting with me anymore. So I didn't know at that time that they were really connecting to me because of the opportunities.
Title.
Yeah, and the title. And so it was only after that I actually realized that I was mourning the loss of this idea of myself.
Hmm.
And I think that those losses, they happen, you know, over time when you let go of different ideas that you have of yourself. But those are really, they can feel like deaths. And from the outside perspective, especially people who don't do a lot of internal work, they'll look at you like you're crazy. Why would you cry about something that's so, you know, they'll try to explain to you why you shouldn't be crying, for instance.
Rationalize it.
They rationalize the emotion, of course, which is another coping mechanism, because if you think you can understand an emotion, then you don't need to feel it. And if you don't need to feel it, then you don't need to allow the pain of that in your own system. You don't need to feel empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can stay separate.
Our sabbatical anyway, I mean, you and Ronnie have been family for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to experience, that will be the loss I experience, not the podcast, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. I want to go back to Anna, because I also try to, it's going to be okay. We're going to see each other in a month. There's this rationalization.
Yeah.
Which you kind of, it's going to be okay, so that you get a grip of yourself. And, yeah, and all of a sudden it's like, the fuck, I can't deny that it hurts.
There's I'm going to call it now the ambiguous loss.
Yeah.
And then that ambiguous loss is now rationalized. I'm going to see her in a month. Then what I noticed in myself when I interact with that person or with somebody else, and if I've distanced myself from that pain, then when I interact with them, it's less meaningful.
It's disconnected.
It's
not connected to the heart.
It's
more rationalized. More,
hey, honey, I'm going to see you in a month.
It's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. Yeah. Like all the words to like separate from the emotion.
Yeah.
And I see that is exactly where we lose connection with the people around us.
Mm.
And if there's something I now see, I just am discovering this on the show. If there's one thing that I sort of have a lot of space for when I connect with others, is their ambiguous loss. So I won't name names, but there was a friend who shared with me a story where her daughters got to a point where they were in the middle of a divorce, and the kids kind of were estranged from their father. And many years later, they now went back to the father. They made peace with the father, but they also had problems with the mother, who they said didn't give them the information they wanted, or they kind of forced the kids to take sides. That was what the kids said. And as I was listening to her speak, it hit me. She has to lose the idea of whatever she thought, like, she's no longer a mother anymore. She's now, because of how they're interacting with her, she's become not only a mother, but also treating her children like adults. They're acting like adults. So now she's having to shift the relationship with them. So they're not dead. They haven't said, we're never going to talk to you. But in a way, they're not the same kids that they were before when they left and then came back to her. So I realized that I was more interested, not in the story, not in what the kids said and not what the result was, but how it was for her emotionally, knowing that she raised these kids perfectly, because if anything, they needed to get to a point they outgrew mommy. And then I could see the tears well up, because that ambiguous loss wasn't being seen. It was too easy to go over it and not to see that she lost the idea that these were her kids per se, but now they're just adults who she happens to be the mother of. And I think you see me do it on the show a lot as well. When you'll often say that I summarize things so that the guest might feel seen and heard, right?
Yeah.
And I think that what I feel like I'm often doing is I'll key in to the thing that's less obvious, because somehow I notice that people don't want to put the empathetic side of things where they feel how it would feel to be the other person. And if you feel the other person, then you would see all the pain that doesn't go spoken because it's too convenient to jump over it. Yeah. And it's sweet because Juliet Reynolds, who was on the show last week speaking about double standards, who has many children herself, she says she can totally relate to that with the children, which I can't imagine any parent not having to go through the kind of the ambiguous loss of having a different relationship with their child, right?
Yeah, as we speak, I can really see now ambiguous loss is everywhere if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, think about COVID.
Yeah.
Today I was riding my bike through town, and in a way, everything feels like back to normal, but it's not. There's a dense energy around me where people are more cautious in how they interact. And somehow we lost. I probably can never do what I did 3 years ago, which was go and hug 12 people a day for 3 months on a daily basis, because I just need physical touch.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to go out, you need to think twice before you do that.
Yeah. Can we stick on that one for a moment? Because I think that's, you know, I remember that when we spoke about the shows, it's when we started the show, especially, there was never a theme you said we wouldn't be able to take on the show.
Fuck.
What?
Yeah. Then there was touch and that really.
And then I said, well, you're having such trouble with touch that let's bring that on the show. And you said, no, I can't do a show for an hour on touch.
I would have cried.
Yeah.
I would have cried the hour.
Yeah. And now we've separated emotionally a bit from that time, so it's easier to bring it on to discuss it, I guess. Or is that the case or no?
I can go. I can feel it.
Yeah.
Go on.
And so what I saw in that was exactly the losing the opportunity to hug is actually an ambiguous loss.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to cry, but I can feel the tears.
Yeah. And I feel like, in a way, like society hasn't set up enough, I would almost call it ceremony, structure, understanding that ambiguous loss is part of life. So at a graduation ceremony, we're actually celebrating the fact that one graduated and they're going to go on to a next thing, whatever that might be. But there isn't the process of understanding that there's a mourning for what is now not no longer there.
Yeah.
And the same as Juliet saying the mourning that her children are no longer her kids. They're their own adults. So that's just something that I've seen more and more of. Yeah.
I kind of knew what the subject is, but now that we've dug deep into it, we're on half an hour, I can actually see how much this subject actually is everywhere, and we kind of don't own it.
And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, me and my ex-girlfriend, right, Jennifer, we decided together to end the relationship, and we did this conscious uncoupling.
Yeah, conscious uncoupling.
And that was hard for me, because even though I'm the one that came and said, "Hey, this is not working."
Yeah.
It was a relationship that didn't end because we didn't love each other. That was the ambiguity of it.
Yeah. Yeah, ending a relationship.
On good terms.
On good terms. Because there's things that just weren't going to be able to be, they were in irreconcilable differences. Yeah. Yeah. You know, if I think about the consistency of all of the ambiguous loss, it's often when I've just taken something, I wouldn't say it, taken it for granted, as if not realizing that it wasn't always going to be there. So when it's gone or it changes, it feels like a death.
Yeah.
Magdalena writes something that I can't quite completely understand. I like her new picture. Often I catch myself telling stories, not able or willing to show emotions.
If I can interpret what I'm hearing Magdalena saying is what we said earlier. You tell the story about something, but it's not coming. It's more the rational telling of the story, as opposed to fuck this hurts and really talking from the pain.
Yeah.
And allowing the pain to kind of to form the words.
Yeah. It would be the coping mechanism. If I get into my head and I understand my heart, I can heal that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm often curious when I'm in an interaction, either with me or watching with others, when someone's vulnerable and then people try to explain them how to feel or think.
Someone's vulnerable and people that are holding that space, instead of holding the space, they're introducing ways how to deal with it.
Yeah.
As opposed to the fact that they're sharing is actually the way to deal with it.
Yeah, it was started. The healing process is them first sharing what it is and allowing that to be felt and experienced. And I was actually on a call, I don't know, recently, and it was an ambiguous loss. It was someone sharing part of the business that wasn't the way that they wanted it, mm-hmm. without blame or anything, but sharing the sadness of that it was what they had originally desired, or whatever that was. And then I saw the other party begin to explain to them why this way was better. And what they weren't saying is they were not saying that the new way was bad. It was painful for them because they were in love, attached to, appreciative of the other way, the earlier way they'd done it there.
Yeah.
And the thing that I see in this ambiguity is that it's hard. If someone's parent dies, it's easier because you can just say, oh, wow. You know, or if something close to you passes away, whoever that might be, it's just easier. But when it's, hey, the company isn't like it was 6 months ago, you know, all of a sudden it's just like, you know, you have masculine energy that says, get over it. You know, that unsympathetic.
Stop being a wuss.
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
And not realizing the person may even want to be participate. They might not even resist, but it doesn't stop the loss, the feeling of it isn't what it was when I started.
What I just said, I realized how many parents tell their children, especially boys,
yeah,
man up.
Yeah, man up.
Yeah. We had Richie Nilsson, of course, on our show, who had a vasectomy. And as we're speaking again, I realize, fuck, that's yeah. I don't know if he experiences like that, but he had to let go of a part of himself.
Do you remember when he expressed identity. It? I mean, when he expressed it, it was exactly, that was a perfect example of this for me, how I see this ambiguous loss. When he said, like, it was different. I didn't know how to explain it, but there was a loss of whoever I thought I was, and there wasn't really an avenue to like share. It wasn't a group of people who could understand it per se. And then he posted on Facebook, of course, which is how we found out. Yeah.
Friendships.
We
had also a show, Outgrowing Friends.
Yeah, Outgrowing Friends.
And I can also say from my life, there's been situations where the relationship didn't work for me, but I still love them.
Mm.
But it, for me, it meant I'm not going to spend as much time as I used to.
Yeah.
Just because I'm going places, or and that energy is too dense and doesn't resonate with where I want to be in life.
Yeah.
So just because I make the decision, it doesn't mean that it was an easy decision.
That's a beautiful example as well. Outgrowing Friends, which was a really nice show.
In fact, Andy, I think we can go through every fucking show that we did.
And we'd see ambiguous loss in it.
Yeah. I think we should call our show Ambiguous. No, but moving forward, I see that that's going to be a present thing for me.
Yeah. You know, I also saw like a good example of an ambiguous loss that touched me was when my dad sold the house that we were raised in.
Hmm.
When he sold the house, it really felt like part of my childhood was gone. And it was amazing to me how much I attached to that house. That, again, as I said earlier, an unrecognized expectation that it would always be there. So, you know, when you're told, hey, your childhood home is being sold or it was sold, then the weirdest feeling is, am I allowed to cry about this? Is it something and if you do cry, on one level, your brain would say, how pathetic is that? Right? Not your brain or the environment.
Yeah. The conditioning.
On another level, it's like, yeah, my God, this place that you have so many memories that formed and shaped you, and now that place, that location is no longer there. Like that is one of those typical moments where there's just a deep mourning. And as I said, I don't really see that process as something that we in society see as like, it's not like there's a Facebook group that says mourning the loss of my childhood home.
So what makes you laugh when you say that?
Because I thought, what a great idea. Maybe we should get it. And when I go back to the US with Ronnie, I'll take her to see the places I was raised, because in a way, it feels like there is a history there that's in that location. It stays there whether we live there or not.
Yeah.
You're going to laugh. Even one time I took her down the wrong street, pointed at the wrong house and said that was where I was raised, only to find out like 3 hours or 4 hours later that it was the wrong street altogether.
But still, it gave you meaning.
But it gave me meaning, because at least that was the connection that I'd made.
Mm.
Yeah.
As you know, I reunited with family that when my father left, before he left, actually, there were problems in the family and all of a sudden we stopped seeing my father's family.
Yeah.
And it was only in my last trip 2.5 months ago where I go to Cyprus and I make proper contact. And as I'm sitting in this room with, I think there were like 10 relatives in their office, actually. And it's a family business.
So
I went to visit them, and I'm sitting there and they're showing me pictures and they're talking. And as they're talking, I'm getting quieter and quieter, because in a way, I'm feeling a lot, and if I also talk, I'm not going to feel it.
Yeah.
And I just started crying. And they're like, oh, they actually felt a bit awkward. Like, have we made you feel uncomfortable?
Yeah.
And I looked around like, no, I just feel that I've deprived myself all these years of all this love.
Yeah.
Which was right there, unconditional.
Yeah.
And I could go back to all the times where I didn't have access to love, and all of a sudden it's right there. So in a way, I was mourning.
Yeah.
The deprivation of
deprivation of love all those years.
Yeah.
It was interesting when I did the tour of the last letter through the U.S. Don't touch the book.
You know I'm going to touch the book, Andy. This is the book, guys. If you haven't read it, yes. Do it.
You know, I take back. I was told by two different people they read the book because they said he keeps raising this book up during the show, so that's why I bought it.
Well,
so.
I mean, when I first read the book,
yeah,
I think around the fifth or sixth time, I sent a letter to my mother and my sister.
Yeah.
And my nephew and my brother, actually. And my mother calls me and she says, you made me cry.
Yeah.
And that was the first step towards healing the relationship with my mother.
Oh, yeah.
I got to share in the letter what she means to me.
Yeah.
And I wrote it from a space of, what if she dies? What do I want to express? So, yeah, I pick up these books because they've been a big part of my own healing process.
Yeah.
So... And it's not like you make money with the books anyway.
Exactly. I was interesting because as you were looking at as we discussed the book, and I was thinking back on the topic of the show of the ambiguous loss, I realized that the last letter, I've always said that I feel that I live life with a bit more urgency than others around me, because I don't take any day for granted. And what I see that I did with the book tour, when inviting people to write letters to loved ones as if it might be the last they write.
60 cities, guys.
Yeah, 60 cities in 3 months.
In 3 months, he drove in a car.
Alone. Very exhausting. The worst part was the food I ate, because everyone served salami and cheese at these events. So I lived off of salami and cheese for like 3 months. But the thing that hit me was that I was trying to make what may have been felt as ambiguous loss felt like a real loss, so that people would be inspired to act. Because I saw that if you separate and rationalize pain and separate from it, then you don't need to do anything, because there's always tomorrow, and you don't need to do it because you'll find a place and a time to interact or tell someone what you feel. But by making it unambiguous, And by really pushing this reality that you could be gone, it immediately pushed people into a space where they wrote this beautiful kind of free, their mind no longer was inhibited by, I got to say it a certain way because this might not be good or whatever the narratives were. So I'm seeing what I've often done in my own life is try to increase urgency by making things less ambiguous so people are more prone to act.
Nice.
Even in my coaching, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the ambiguous is so hard. Because people don't feel like they have the right to mourn and the right to feel bad. Because it's just something that no one would understand if I tell them I'm going to cry about something like a house or a friend that we're still, maybe still in contact with, but we moved five blocks away from each other, so we're not next door neighbors anymore.
Yeah.
Like these are the weird things that are so hard to mourn, but they feel painful on such a deep level. Yeah. We do have people that are also with us. It would be great to hear anyone that's watching, if you could share areas where you felt ambiguous loss, where you'd say it wasn't easy to share it because society or your people around you wouldn't understand the pain that it brought up in you.
And just put it in the comments.
Yeah, just put it in the comments.
I've been trying to call my nephew for the last 7 days.
Okay.
Not successful. Yeah. He's either working or he's in the mountains or he's...
Have you left a message?
We've been messaging, but
okay.
I realize... Also in this conversation, I love him so much that I've been yearning to connect with him. And now that we've doing this show, I'm like looking at myself like, oh, wow, that's what's behind me kind of reaching out for him every day. And I also speak to my mother every morning.
Yeah.
That's still going on. And saying goodbye to her every day is quite hard.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would call it ambiguous loss, but...
Yeah, no, that doesn't feel ambiguous. When you say goodbye, because I know the number of times you've read the books and things, and I know I mentioned in the book how when I say goodbye to my dad, I always allowed myself to feel as if it would be the last time I'd say goodbye to him.
Hmm.
Is that the goodbye that you feel? Is that what makes it so emotional?
She told me this morning that she has a light case of cancer on the skin on her nose.
Okay.
And even though she said it's not serious and they're going to monitor it, I don't take that for granted.
Yeah. I noticed that there's another aspect of ambiguous loss I often connect to is with work, big projects. If I work someone for a few years or I do a project for a period, when that project ends, there's this sense of like a mourning that will be done.
I can imagine, though, because you as a coach, you go in and you really get to know people on a much deeper level.
Yeah.
And you kind of hold space and witness them unfolding and getting more at peace with themselves to the degree the space allows that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can imagine that you're...
Yeah, it reminds me of a little bit of my relationship with my mentor, Case. And I remember the day I was doing a project and he started to tell me how to do it right. And I said, Case, we're not doing this interaction like this anymore. I know how I need to do it, how I can take responsibility for it. As soon as I have you tell me how to do it and I can't own it anymore, that isn't going to work. And at that moment, there was a shift in our dynamic. So it was no longer mentor-mentee. There was sort of an equalization, and we were just together. And what I saw was that there was I cried that night, and he cried, because we both lost emotionally this idea of who the one was to the other. Mm. You know, I no longer had that father-like figure who was my mentor, and he no longer had the student that he had in the identification, at least that's what I would say, in me. And then we came, and then we shared that, and we both laughed, and we just went on, you know.
That's really beautiful, the fact that it was spoken out, and then it's not lingering.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say the reason why we could get to that point was exactly the reason there was nothing there not to speak about. I think if I didn't speak or he didn't speak, then we would see, okay, there's still something here to work out. But there was the pain of it, again, was this idea in my head of who I was and who he was, and letting go of that, and then having to feel the pain of that loss. Of course, he died some months later. Yeah.
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 That was not an ambiguous loss, Andy.
No. And it still can be hard to mourn. So for some people, a loss like that still might be ambiguous, because you can't say how someone experiences the loss. Magda shares something really, which would be incredible, actually. Thank you for translating, Bambos. You're touching so much I can relate to. Latest ambiguous loss was all around my divorce. Divorce has got to be one of the hardest ambiguous losses in some ways.
Yeah, I was just thinking, there's not only divorcing the person, but you're also divorcing a part of yourself.
Yeah. And as you're different with that person, there's also a rediscovery of who you are. So there's weird feelings that might also come up, like, was I not this way because of them? Could I have been that way also with them?
This subject sheds light also to me not always understanding when a girlfriend of mine looks for contact in an old relationship, which was quite abusive. And I see she's evolved, but I see that she goes back to it in a way just to stay connected.
Are you saying with you specifically, or
other relationships?
Oh, okay.
Like, there's just a friend. And in a way, even though it was an abusive relationship, they are mourning.
Mm.
I'm not sure what they're mourning, but they're mourning. And I can see how ambiguous loss is also there, but it's just not spoken about.
Yeah.
But I see that when I saw it, it just confuses me.
Yeah. And are you saying it confuses you because you'd say, why are you going back to this idiot?
Why are you going back to this idiot?
Yeah. And you'd say, because they're not able to feel the loss, I guess, and that they're trying to find solace in the connection to the person.
Oh, that would be an assumption. Good assumption, by the way.
No.
So possibly she feels even guilty, maybe, for feeling that as a loss, because she was being abused, and all of a sudden she's feeling that pain. And is that pain okay? She might be even judged by me.
Yeah.
Potentially.
You know, at 20 minutes into this show, I felt like, wow, I don't know how we're going to carry this for the hour. And then I just sort of allowed myself to feel deeper and deeper where those losses came up for me.
Yeah.
The one we didn't touch on completely was about outgrowing friends. And I saw, and I still see till today, there's people that I've had to separate myself from because of whatever behavior was just not able to be managed. And what I've noticed is that there's always an ambiguous loss there because they're not dead, and yet they're gone.
Yeah.
So I have seen there is certainly an ambiguous loss connected to friends who I'm no longer having contact with. Yeah.
You recently helped a mutual friend of ours to say goodbye to a friend of his, a childhood friend, in fact.
Yeah.
And they went through everything for, and I could see for him, it was, even though it was healthy to say goodbye, it was very difficult because the rationale was we've done so many things together. We lived so many moments.
Well, he knows me better than anyone else.
He came to my dad's funeral.
Yeah.
He even spoke at my dad's funeral, and then we don't speak anymore.
Yeah.
If you're listening, I feel you, brother.
Yeah. Juliet shares something. Again, she says, sometimes I think people go back. You don't know yourself enough anymore. Oh, speaking towards the earlier comment.
Yeah. I'm not completely understanding
when
this.
You were talking about an abusive relationship.
Yeah, but I'm not completely understanding the response. So.
When she says, sometimes I think people, I think she's stating that people go back to the abusive relationship because they still don't know themselves enough. If they knew themselves enough and saw what was triggering them to go back, they wouldn't go back. So in essence, what she's saying, they haven't learned the lesson they need to learn yet so that they don't make that mistake. It's almost like the world will keep presenting you the same problem until you finally solve it. Yeah.
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 Thank you, Juliet.
Yeah. So, Bambos, and she can validate that she says, yes, that exactly.
We had a great show with her.
We did have a great show with her. Yeah. So, Bambos.
We've come to our
ambiguous
hour.
Ambiguous loss.
Did you just tap my thigh three times?
Yeah. Here we go. How are you feeling now?
Space to mourn. Like somehow this show has given me permission to, when I do speak to my nephew or even Anna later today, to actually speak more deeply from an embodied space.
Yeah. Beautiful.
It's also a very creative space. When I allow it in, I tend to write a lot, and sometimes it's really beautiful. I mean, you wrote two books, right?
No, and I would say to you, if I don't allow that in, I can't write. It's that space where the writing comes from.
How did it feel for you to get critics on your third book?
It was certainly an ambiguous loss, for sure. Although I like doing things well, I do like doing them quickly. And I love the creativity. I don't love the management. So if I have a moment to write and I put out, whatever the 50, 60,000 words, it's like, bang, it's out there. And then I'm like, okay, let the world decide how it finds it. And then when the feedback comes, there was a pain in that I know the feedback is totally right.
Mm.
Like in that I sensed it even as I wrote it, my state of mind was trying to convey more ideas than just the authentic stories. And that was the purpose of that book. And yet I see that it didn't reach the emotional state of people because it was not written in the form to reach the emotional state. So there was a sadness in that I didn't think about that ahead. I just wrote. I don't think ahead. I just write. I just follow the sense like, let me speak. Let me see what wants to come out.
Channel.
And then afterwards I see what is it telling me. And I started to rewrite the book today. I rewrote Start. And I started to see when I read it, and I got pulled from my heart to my head, I started editing again. So I read it less from me writing it and more from the reader who says, how do I stay connected to me in this case as I'm going through the text? and I could see sections where I put in a lot of intellectual stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's just got to go. Or I put things too formalized. I never speak formalized. So I thought, let me make it more in how I write or how I speak, make it more accessible, make it easier to, you know, to get to. And I saw that there was a lot of pain. I would really call it ambiguous loss, because in a way I lost the idea that it would be easy. Yeah. I lost the idea that I could throw it over the fence and say, okay, great, it's done. And now just get on with life again. So there was a sense of loss there.
I mean, when I read the first chapter and I called you to share, that was difficult for me because I've never given you what I would call, it's always been, it's great, it's great, it's great. This is the first time I said, oh, wow, this, I need something different from you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we called the next time, like, that was the toughest feedback I ever had to give you.
That's interesting. And I, you know, how I am, I mean, if you read the next chapter, you'll see the first thing is just everyone gets to have their experience. Yeah, but there was some aspect of just sadness. And I've already started to rewrite it. Even the first chapter has totally been redone. But the thing is that there is some part of the loss of just having the idea of what I thought it could be, have it not be as easy and effortless as I had in my mind.
We've come to the end of the show. JC, please send Andy some hats.
Yes, JC. Ronnie has told me that she likes red hats. And now I've been
Republican.
Since I wear a red hat and have a beard, all of a sudden I become Republican. So very curious. You know, what am I going to do? Ask Bolalong's son. What does Andy need to do in order to wear a red hat and not be perceived as anything other than a person? Maybe if I wear a red hat, but then there's a dolphin on it, then he'll say he doesn't know what to do with me. Thank you for being with us this show, and we will see you where?
A wonderful chaos.
It's a wonderful chaos.
We like it that way.